Now, just under 4 weeks to go, three candidates all looking for one job to be the next President of Ireland. In a moment, we'll discuss the first few days of the campaign trail and the campaign. But today, the Fianna Fáil candidate Jim Gavin is launching his campaign in Dublin. Our political correspondent Micheál Lehane is there. Micheál, you write today on the RT News website that the predominant view at the moment is that Jim Gavin's campaign has so far failed to catch fire. Is he trying to change that today?
Well, it was a very clear message today on what his priorities are. He even produced a document outlining them, talking about things like youth services and youth activity and being a voice to ensure that there is inclusivity for people with disabilities, and also focusing in on community work, in particular looking at disadvantaged communities. And that was a theme of his launch in many ways, saying that the building where this was taking place in central Dublin, which overlooks the banks of the Liffey, a new slick building, he said that was illustrative of a rising Ireland. But he said, looking out the window, there are communities struggling which are sitting side by side with this, and he wants to be a voice for both things. That's very much the message. Within this forum, Jim Gavin was quite relaxed. His wife and family were there, his mother was there, politicians from Fianna Fáil, of course, and then other people who he's worked with over the years, including former Dublin GA stars, including Dean Rock, who spoke about the values he imparted to that team, things like humility, hard work and respect, and people too from the North Inner City, where he's been chair of a task force, people saying that his encouragement to businesses and community groups there was key in recent years.
You've been reporting today, though, that there was a charge being made that some in Fianna Fáil were perhaps not as enthusiastic as they might be about canvassing for Mr. Gavin. Is that something that the party leadership is acknowledging and is trying to address?
I put that to Micheál Martin when he arrived here just before the launch. He said there was full commitment behind Jim Gavin and that there was a structure on the ground now in place to ensure that there is a large ground element to the campaign. He said, as well as the media and the importance of that engagements that they will have for Jim Gavin, that the ground structure is important as well. He cited the Fianna Fáil part of that and also Jim Gavin's own network. I think it is undeniably the case, though, that around Leinster House in the last number of days, there were some who were perhaps questioning just how great will that outpouring be of support and of hard work on the ground over the next 4 weeks for Jim Gavin. When I asked the candidate himself, he said Fianna Fáil is the sum of its parts, and that he had been up and down the country in the selection process before that parliamentary party meeting getting support, and he was confident it would be there. But the next number of weeks, of course, are key now, because the central part the debates will play, that's acknowledged, but equally there is that ground war, as it used to be called. And for Jim Gavin, that's a particularly important one, because his advocates within Fianna Fáil say that he is good when meeting people one-to-one. So that is a part of the campaign that will have to be worked on.
Micheál, thank you very much. That's our political correspondent, Micheál, reporting there from Jim Gavin's campaign launch. Let's take a look now at the first few days of the presidential campaign. And we're joined in our studio by Gerard Howland, political columnist and public affairs consultant. Gerard, thank you very much for being with us today. We now know the candidates, but we also know who's not going to be on the ballot paper. Maria Steen, the barrister and stay-at-home mother, who had been a part of several referendum campaigns in the past. There's been a fair bit of criticism from her and from her supporters that she was kept off the ballot paper by establishment politicians. And I think Senator Michael McDougall has taken a lot of the heat on that. He's standing by his decision not to sign her paper, saying that he didn't want to put a candidate into the race who he would oppose. But is it bad for democracy that Maria Steen is not in the race?
I think it's bad for democracy that a voice like hers is not on the ballot paper. I think there's a fair point to be made that a substantial number of people with views that are similar to hers who do not feel those views are articulated in politics. My personal view was that it would have been good if she had been on the ballot paper. But I've really gone off her a bit in the last 48 hours. I think the cribbing and complaining about being blocked is nonsense. She's not on the ballot paper, not because she was blocked. She didn't get the support. No independent senator or TD, if you have respect for their independence, is under any obligation whatsoever to support you. Marion Harkin, Minister of State and independent TD for Sligo, is somebody who I greatly respect. She took a view that, notwithstanding the fact that she was committed to voting for Heather Humphrey as a presidential candidate, she would sign Maria Steed's nomination papers. And that was her conclusion for herself. Perfectly legitimate. Equally legitimate is the view of others that they were not. And I think Maria Steen, the last 48 hours, have diminished her.
Let's turn our focus to the candidates that are in the race now. Catherine Connolly attracted some attention this week over comments she made when she suggested that there were parallels between Germany's increase in military spending today with the 1930s when the Nazis were rearming, and some disquiet over those comments.
Yes, and, you know, words matter. And when you're president of Ireland, your words travel around the world. And because you are president, it is assumed that you speak for Ireland, regardless of whether you do or not. So what's going to happen over the next few weeks is we, the people, are going to test these people very carefully in interview after interview and debate after debate to form a view which one of them we think has it together, has the composure, as well as the character to perform the office of president.
But do the words that people speak during the campaign, do they matter as much as the words a president would speak afterwards?
They matter hugely, because they will inform our decision as to who will become president.
Yeah, there are several parties then behind Catherine Connolly: Sinn Féin, Labour, Social Democrats, People for Profit. Which of those parties are likely to shape her campaign, do you think?
I'm not sure, and I go back to Mary Robinson, and Mary Robinson was very clear, notwithstanding, perhaps a slight overclaim by the Labour Party at the time that she was a Labour Party candidate. She wasn't. She was an independent candidate with Labour and a Democratic Left and other support at the time. And I see Catherine Connolly as a candidate in that mould. I do not see her as the creature or character of any one of those parties. She's her own person. I think she's made that very clear in terms of what she said.
Heather Humphreys has started her campaign speaking about her experience as a government minister. But yet again, this week, we saw her come in for criticism over her time in government. The latest story the latest criticism of her coming from Lucia O'Farrell, the mother of Shane O'Farrell, who died in a hit and run involving a driver who should have been in jail. Heather Humphreys is from Monaghan. Lucia O'Farrell and Shane O'Farrell were from Monaghan. Lucia told the Irish Times this week that Heather Humphreys was not supportive of her campaign for an inquiry into her son's death, even though there were others in government who were supportive. Are we seeing now decisions which Heather Humphreys made while she was in office being revisited again during this campaign?
The answer is, of course, Justin, of course you are. As a minister for over 10 years, she was party to thousands of decisions. And the reason they would be gone over backwards and forwards now is because this is a test of character. Are these people who they say they are? What is the record behind them? So this is all perfectly legitimate, and it is going to be part of the prison over the coming weeks, which will enable us to make a final decision.
Let's talk about Jim Gavin. We heard Micheál reporting from his campaign launch there. He was forced to come out after a smear campaign against him online, making it, I suppose, a difficult start for him. How do you think he's dealt with that?
Well, not just a difficult start, a very unpleasant start. I mean, to have those conversations with family members must be very distressing. Look, I think this campaign so far, we're only at the very start of it, is a bit of a box of wet matches, to be quite honest with you. The question is, can somebody catch fire, spark? We'll see that in the coming days. Jim Gavin today has set out a stall. Like the other candidates, there are constituent parts of his career that are very impressive. The challenge for him, can he synthesise those different parts into something that's better, that tells a story, that says to us, he best embodies us between 2025 and 2032, 7 years during which the world will change.
Before I let you go, Gerard, I do want to ask you about Martin Manser and his death. He's a former Fianna Fáil Minister of State, former TD and Senator, a key advisor to a number of Taoiseach, especially on Northern Ireland. I know you knew him. I'm sure you will have worked with him. He is someone who made an enormous contribution to the peace process in this country as well.
He did. I worked with him for over 11 or 12 years. My sympathies today to his wife, Liz, and to their children. I've been friends with him ever since. I was, of course, a very junior colleague. He was a much more senior person. His really weighty historical importance, the full story of that has yet to be told. He was not just an advisor, but he was a decisive actor in that peace process over years. He was a civil servant who became a political advisor, who became a senator, who became a TD, who became a minister. And you know, he's one of the people who has the fewest critics. He's a man, I believe, with no enemies. He is a man, I think, who went to the end with universal respect of all who knew him, all who dealt with him.
Gerard Harlan, political columnist and public affairs consultant, thank you very much for speaking with us today. Welcome back. You're listening to This Week on RTE Radio 1. Now, social media will play a big role in this year's presidential election. Not only is it an important campaigning tool, but it's also a place where candidates can spend money to test their messages and see if what they're saying resonates with voters. Well, Liz Carolan is from thebriefing.ie and keeps a close eye on these things and is with us now in our studio. Good afternoon and welcome to the programme. So the candidates, they can buy ads on social media at the moment. I think that is going to change, though, isn't it?
It is changing. So this week, Google stopped allowing people within the European Union to run ads, and Meta, who own Facebook and Instagram, are going to stop on October the 10th. So this is because there's new rules coming in from Europe, and rather than comply, they're going to try and just sort of stop ads running altogether.
So right now then, what are we seeing in terms of the candidates spend on social media, and which platforms are they spending money on?
So they are spending money on Meta platforms, and Heather Humphreys is by far spending the most. So she spent over about €11,000 in the last 2 weeks. And that compares to Jim Gavin, who spent about €1,500, and Catherine Connolly, who spent less than €1,000. But there's very different kind of strategies at play. Heather Humphreys has been primarily pushing this really nicely kind of produced introduction to the candidate video of her at home and her daughter kind of speaking about her. Whereas if you look at Catherine Connolly, she's ran tons of ads, very small amounts of money behind them, and mostly either testing out different messages or doing some stuff around recruiting volunteers, trying to get some funding in. Very different approaches.
And when you say they're testing out messages, I mean, how does that actually work for them?
So if you're running a campaign, you can have five different ads, one which just focuses in on Catherine's an independent, another which might focus in on, you know, say your stance on Gaza. You can run those targeting different segments of the population and see how people react to them. So, you know, that's not going to sway the election or influence tons of voters. But what it does give you back is information. So say in Monday night's debate, you can tell, OK, which points do I want to kind of click off here? So it's kind of a well-worn practice in political campaigning.
And who's getting the traction then?
Well, TikTok is perhaps an interesting one to look at because you're not allowed to pay to reach people. And all three candidates are now on TikTok. But if you look, it's kind of the inverse of what they're spending on Meta. So Catherine Connolly has 13 times as many followers as Heather Humphreys on TikTok at the moment. She's ran kind of plenty of ads or plenty of videos, sorry, not ads. Her kind of campaign introduction video got about 500,000 sort of views on TikTok, which is pretty good. Jim Gavin is running about 2 videos a day. So those kind of like quick reaction videos. I'm at the ploughing, I'm cycling around a shopping centre, very high energy, nearly has kind of Simon Harris in the general election last year vibes to it. Just a kind of stream of content. Whereas Heather Humphreys, she's still going for these quite well produced videos. She's doing much fewer and she is getting considerably less traction than either of the other two candidates. Heather is on TikTok, for example.
And none of the candidates would be what you might describe as digital natives. I mean, they're all at the just by the nature of the contest, candidates for presidential elections tend to be older, but they're not people who grew up with social media. So how are they dealing with that then?
Yeah, it's really tricky for them, especially with the demise of kind of paid ads, because Heather Humphrey clearly has a kind of campaign strategy of doing these really nicely well produced kind of video pieces of content. they don't tend to do as well without putting money behind them. And pretty soon she can't put any more money behind them. Jim Gavin seems to be going for this kind of like high energy, constant stream of trying to kind of hack algorithms by, you know, just sort of being present, being kind of everywhere all at once. Whereas Heather Humphreys, Catherine Connolly is doing slightly more kind of interesting things. So, for example, this week she had a reaction video to an influencer who was kind of criticizing her. She created a reaction video where she was doing and that did quite well. That got quite well in kind of organic reach.
What about podcasts then? Some of them are appearing on podcasts.
They are. So Jim Gavin was on Joe Brawley's podcast and Catherine Connolly this week, she was on Blind Boys, which is one of the biggest podcasts in the country, and on Louise McSherry's. So this is kind of a comfortable space for candidates. It was really big in the US in the last election. Podcasts are a growing medium, I think, for kind of younger and frankly middle-aged people as well. It gives you space and time. I think the interview on Blind Boy was maybe like an hour or an hour and a half. It's sort of a space away from those news snippets.
And tell me then, when the changes come into force and candidates won't be able to spend money to push their messages anymore, what's left for them to do on social media? Do they just use their own channels then to promote themselves? Is that how it's going to work?
They'll have to either use a following that they've built, and none of them would have fantastic kind of organic followings. What we'll probably end up seeing is influencers or other people who are connected to them promoting them on their channels. But I also think we're just going to see a lot more posters. We're going to see a lot more bus shelter ads. Like, I imagine there's quite a few podcasts and different spaces like that lined up. It is going to be tricky. I think especially if last year, like Fine Gael in particular, do tend to spend quite a bit of money around elections, and that money is going to be potentially no good to them.
Liz, thank you very much for speaking with us today. That's Liz Carolyn from thebriefing.ie.